So we're ringing Brent now. And I think we may get into his machine here shortly. But you never can tell. If you want to reach an update on the warming center itself, which, though it's not usually open in the summer months, is 246-1234.
Brent Adams, Director of Warming Center Program and Day and Night Storage Program. Please leave a message. If you need the homeless hotline, call 246-1234.
As I mentioned.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time.
No, sounds like he is being rather busy. So, you can also find more information from Brent and advertisements for his program on his variety of websites. It's the Day and Night Storage, Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz. There may be a new one about the laundry that he is working on beginning starting in June. Good for him. And he's often quite critical of the activists these days. I think he feels that we are taking away support from his programs or perhaps unduly criticizing him. I don't think I've been particularly critical of Brent lately. I mean, I disagree with him on some things, and we have some arguments on the phone, or have had in the past. But, you know, we're all looking for services and civil rights for homeless people. It's just a disagreement on the road to get there. So let me take a look online, see if there's anything I want to pass on from his Facebook page, Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz. Before I do, let me clarify. I began this broadcast mentioning that I was going to talk a bit about the last city council meeting, and I mentioned that I'd written a story about it on Santa Cruz Indie Media. The story there is headed, Sentinel Presents Sympathetic Story on Van Dweller Harassment Ducks Political Accountability. Whoops, actually that's an older story. The story that I raised or wrote recently is called Raising Some Issues at Oral Communications, which is kind of a tame heading. I prefer it would be something like, I don't know, trying to squeeze in some relevant comments about city council process and their inaction on homeless civil rights activity and on the police department's indifference to, if not collusion with, vigilante violence or violent threats that's happening. Because Alicia Cool did do a presentation at City Council, and I presented a flyer which included both my suggestions that about what people, homeless people, could do to defend themselves from harassment if they live in their vehicles, as well as my critique of City Council and its own failure to establish a process that even allows the ordinary individuals and the public, I'm thinking most notably of people concerned with homeless civil rights who come and try and talk about that, to get some kind of access to the agendas, to a reasonable public comment period, not to be treated rudely and robotically by a mayor who seems to think she's in a classroom and these are children she's dealing with that she can simply gag at will, threaten with arrest, exclude, and so forth, if they go over her time limits. Of course, this is the responsibility of the entire council. It's not just her, it's the progressive majority. And I tend to hold people like Crone, Glover, and of course, particularly Cummings and Brown, because they're Cummings, particularly since he's the swing vote, but they all should be raising their voices on these issues, even if they aren't successful. Because raising your voice gives some sense that it's an issue for you. It's an important issue for you. And if you don't raise your voice and you're sort of waiting for that glorious day when you suddenly have a council majority, as Micah Posner and some say Don Lane was doing, when those two, well, they certainly acted like pseudo-liberals, particularly Lane on the city council. Micah since then has really put some effort into trying to assist Glover's January and February proposals and has tried to provide support for Ross Kemp. Litigants trying to get the city to behave lawfully toward homeless people. So I've got to acknowledge that with him and thank him for that. But generally speaking, the idea that you're going to pull in your fangs and not speak your true mind on issues because you might offend your fellow council members or get a bad mark from Cynthia Matthews or incur a frown from city manager Martine Bernal and his staff toadies. I don't know if even they're toadies. They may be more enablers of Martine Bernal, the very powerful city manager. I'm thinking of outgoing Tina Scholl, who's moving to Scotts Valley, as I believe, some position in the city management structure there. Or, of course, as I mentioned before, Susie O'Hara, who sold out first the River Street Campground, then subsequently sold out the Ross Camp Campground, and has been pretty good at... Early before that, she sold out the homeless with the task force on public hysteria, which was then known more officially as the task force on public safety, where, of course, homeless were identified as the major public safety expense and threat. completely ludicrous, but well in keeping with the Take Back Santa Cruz priorities that were, some of us believed, truly the underlying motivations for that task force, which created numerous acts of legislation which have been used hundreds of times against homeless people, most notably stay-away orders by the Parks and Rec Department that don't involve courts but just involve police taking unilateral action themselves with no other justification than their belief that they have probable cause to issue a ticket, not even to have it charged in court or much less convicted in court. Much less have a judge rule that on top of that conviction there should be an additional stay-away order. This provides a mechanism for simply criminalizing homeless people in all kinds of locations around the city based upon essentially often survival behavior, being in a park after dark and trying to rest, smoking in a park when there's no legal place for them to smoke, or there are very few legal places and that's where they are, and so they smoke there, not around anybody, not bothering anyone, but doing it. There's a very high percentage of homeless people who do smoke, or there was some years ago. I think it was 70%+ compared to 17% of the total population. Anyway, you can go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website if you want to check some of my analysis of the last city council meeting, or you can just sort of hang on and hear some of the stuff that I'm going to be commenting on now as I play some of the oral communications. But first, I'm going to call back Alicia Kuhl and get her report on what's happening, what's been happening, and what's going to be happening if she has any notions around the lawsuit, around RV harassment, around other options that homeless people do and don't have, she being one of them, since she and her family live in their vehicle. So I'm now on the line with Alicia Kuhl, who's cooling her heels in one of her Home on Wheels. How's everything going at the Home on Wheels?
Everything is going good.
So you've been kind of doing some housekeeping chores around the lawsuit by the Ross Camp refugees, or Rough Riders, as some call them, folks who were driven away from Ross Camp with inadequate shelter into unsafe situations and were trying to get some damages from the city with a lawsuit in federal court coming up. Where does that stand, and what's cooking?
Well, we have a conference coming up. It's August 1st. We have filed our notice of intent to appeal, which goes to the Ninth District in San Francisco, I believe it is, although it was filed in San Jose and it gets forwarded there. And we are collecting evidence to show that people are, in fact, having damages occur to them. And it's not just people from the Ross Camp. There's people just displaced all over the place right now. There are people being harassed. There's been death threats towards homeless people online, threats of violence. So there's a lot of things going on right now.
You want to kind of cite some of those threats? I know that you and I may have a disagreement about whether people making nasty comments to each other about driving homeless people away and burning down their camps is necessarily a direct death threat. But some of this stuff does sound pretty nasty. What have you received or heard about?
Well, I was actually told by Abby, who was told by a police officer, I'm trying to remember his name, Carter, I think his name is, who said that a threat has to be coincide with an act or something mentioned, a threat of violence, and it has be partnered with a specific person, like a person or thing type situation. It can't be just saying like, oh, I'm going downtown with baseball bats. But the specific threats that I'm talking about are very specific. Like the three baseball bats, getting Louisville Sluggers, getting a cleaning crew together, stomping on the back of this particular motorhome, getting gasoline and a match. These comments were directed towards a particular RV that was parked on Young Love. So that might make it legally a threat. I mean, I'm not, you know, a police officer, just going by bits and pieces of what I've heard. But either way, it's perceived as a threat to a lot of people when you say things like that.
Now, two questions here. One is, A, how have the police reacted as far as you know, number one? And then, B, has this threat driven away this person from their location?
If you want to say. I haven't heard any official comments from the police as to how they're going to handle these threats. It has been made aware because, like you know, I did a presentation at City Council. They took some of the documentation as the public record. I haven't received an official statement from, like, Andy Mills as to what he's going to do about that, if he's following up, if he's investigating. And as to part two, the RV that was mentioned did move to another location.
Mm-hmm. Have you actually heard of any actual violence against particular RVs? I know you had a press conference some months ago where you invited Andy Mills at the police station to respect the 72-hour law and hear the concerns of residents in vehicles that they were being falsely accused of overstaying their time. Police were coming out and finding additional problems with their vehicles to cause them to either move their vehicle or else get threatened with a citation, a correction citation. That kind of threat, I don't know if that it was a specific in any particular case, but I think that was the implication of some of the discussion, even when Chief Mills himself responded publicly to some of this. But he did not give you any assurance, at least none that I heard at that conference, that there would be an end to this. Or at least, he can't really guarantee an end to it, but he could guarantee that he would instruct his officers to tell people calling who don't want RVs in their neighborhood that they indeed can suggest something after a 72-hour period, but before that, they had best not make false claims that a vehicle's been there for more than 72 hours. Have you been hearing that there's any kinds of... Well, are there continued complaints that people are making false 72-hour, you're overstaying your time complaints?
Well, of course, yeah, there's continued complaints of that. There were suggestions on Facebook on the group Santa Cruz Looks Like Shit, a bunch of people making suggestions like, you know, tell the police you saw them with a weapon, hint, hint, you know, they'll come faster. There's been all kinds of suggestions of violence. There's been no violence recently in particular that I've heard of, but I know, like, my friend Corlane, she's had her RV egged, and I'm concerned with, like, the escalation of potential violence and just potential actions that could make people violent. Like, for instance, coming up on June 3rd, what I am calling the anti-RV camping meeting put on by the Westside Neighbors from 5 to 7 at the police station building. And that's all about, you know, what they can do to deter people. And I'm going to attend that because I'm concerned about their mock ticketing situation that they were discussing.
Well, what would that be? Explain that mock ticketing thing.
Well, I mean, that's why I'm going, because I have no idea exactly what they have in mind. But, I mean, if that is suggestive of them pretending to be police officers or people of law enforcement and actually placing what looks like tickets on people's vehicles, I mean, I'm not sure that that's okay. You know, that they're... I think that there's concerns involved in that. That's touching people's property. That's lurking around people's property. I have a concern over that guy, Jeremy, and I'm not going to pronounce his name right, but over there by Sub Rosa, this wasn't a vehicle-dwelling person, but he approached, you know, he went like, I don't know, 30 yards out of his way or something like that to get into a homeless man's face and proceed to tell him to not be on the sidewalk, that the sidewalk's for walking, not sitting and camping. And, you know, he doesn't know if that person has a weapon. That homeless person doesn't know if he has a weapon. I mean, these are aggressive acts that are just seem to be escalating around here, and I really don't want anybody to get hurt, either homeless or vigilante.
Mm-hmm. You also, I believe, have said, I was at this meeting where both of us were, we regularly go to on Wednesdays, 11 o'clock, it's Conscience in Action, at noon, or soon thereafter, or an hour thereafter, it becomes HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. But the purpose for both those meetings seems to be to focus on, it often goes to homeless issues like RVs and bathrooms and the elimination of Ross Camp with no alternatives and so forth. But at that meeting, I believe there was some discussion of your gathering of more of the items that you were gathering for the court lawsuit, originally to keep the injunction in place, declarations that homeless people had that if the Ross Camp was dispersed, they would be in a more perilous situation than before, that it was an immediate threat to them. But you're also now, I think, planning to gather more declarations. You've said, you and others, at the Food Not Bombs meal from 4 to 6 on the weekends when they do their Saturday and Sunday meal at the main post office. Is that accurate?
Right. We will have a table there. I'll be at the table quite frequently, but I will be trading places, you know, with some other people, some other volunteers. And we're going to be taking declarations of, mostly it will be focused on the harm, anything that's happened, what happened, you know, during people's quest to find shelter, how they've been treated, were they able to find shelter, why or why not, and just things like that. I know that there's been a lot of harm thus far. I mean, somebody has hanged themselves in the past few weeks. Somebody's dog got hit by a car because they were traveling across the freeway in an attempt to get to a location that was far enough out of way of law enforcement that they wouldn't tear their camp down. I know that I personally have witnessed the police giving a trespass ticket to a homeless man named Malcolm. And so they, you know, they're very much ticketing and citing people. They're very much taking people's property right now. So there's a lot of harm happening. They don't have adequate shelter as we speak. So, yeah. So we will be taking documentation of that. And we're not the only city, I might add, that is suing over this. There are several other cities right now that are dealing with the same thing.
I remember I read, I think, a small article about San Clemente, and attorneys down there, or one attorney, filing on behalf of homeless people against that city's restrictive, either, I think it's threat to clear encampments, or maybe it's arrest policies, I'm not sure, one or the other.
Sacramento as well, over the recent homeless encampment enclosure that they did, and the way that they went about it, and the lack of adequate shelter, Sacramento as well.
And I know San Diego's in a struggle around the rights of RV people. I've been collecting articles on that. I haven't been reading much allowed on the air yet, but I may do some of that during this show.
And I believe Berkeley is having a problem and had to rescind their RV ban because that is unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment, according to the ACLU. And I believe there's a threatened lawsuit or something of that nature to the point where they've lifted that ban.
Well, I think what they've done is they've suspended enforcement of it, although
I haven't
seen, I mean, they passed it, and it is still active on the books. It's just like we have a sleeping ban.
It's problematic. My words might not be correct. Exactly.
No, I'm not criticizing
it, but it's definitely problematic.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to be accurate so that, you know, there's a, I'm trying to be a stickler
right.
for the details.
Yeah, you can dissect that for me, but it's definitely problematic and it's unconstitutional in Berkeley.
Now, what about, have you heard anything more about, I haven't heard that there's been any move by our ineffectual Coastal Commission enforcement people, although I don't think they're going to enforce shit unless the activists get their asses down there and start putting pressure on them almost directly. You know, I don't know, camping out in front of their offices.
I'm just not sure who to put the pressure on. I mean, I've had extensive conversation with Sarah Carville. She tells me that basically, you know, they have limited power to enforce that the city, you know, does their permit process and goes about things the right way, or removes the signs until they do. I mean, they have, like, I guess, limited power. And so meanwhile, nothing happens. They just continuously remind the city that they're out of compliance with their own procedures regarding the signs up on Delaware and all the no parking midnight to 6 a.m. signs that are in the coastal zone, the ones on Fair.
It might be a matter of taking them to court, which, of course, is always a, you know, pain in the ass and costly and requires expertise and so forth. But I also think that you can't rely on necessarily what Cargyle tells you, that her name is, Sarah tells you, because she's, you know, I mean, she may be sincere, she may be, you know, trying to encourage you to back off. But again, it's not in your hands. I'm just saying other activists who are concerned about this, if we are, should be getting together to do something, and maybe we will. You know, we're trying to do 100 different little projects at 100 different times. So you also talked about possibly a second press conference, since I don't know, did you feel it was you've had two press conferences, at least that I've been involved with, that you've been at, that were really successful in bringing media. One was at the, well, actually there were three. I don't know, I don't think you were at the first one. We went to Parks and Rec and protested their bathrooms. That was this last summer. But you were at the one at the police station that I mentioned before, challenging Mills, demanding that they stop essentially enabling these people who are falsely putting in 72-hour complaints when people haven't been there for 72 hours. And then, of course, the issue of barbed wire, visitation rights, and so forth at the River Street camp at 1220 River. What's your assessment of those two press conferences, and do you think a third one would be a good idea around the issue of this violence situation?
Well, I think the other ones were very good. Always could be a little more organized, of course, but I think they were good. I got word this morning from a post that Steve Pleitch did that I guess essentially some or most of the barbed wire has been removed from over there, but he showed a photograph, and I could still see barbed wire in the whole frontal area of the fencing right there. So, you know, I'm not sure how much of that has been done, but we were able to get Captain Harold to, you know, move his 30 rules down to 10. We did get some media attention, so we're putting the word out. And in regards to the recent acts of violence and a press conference, I definitely think that's important because, obviously for several different reasons. One, we need the community to know that this is happening. We need to put pressure on the police department here to do something about it, and we need to find out what their plan is, if they have a statement regarding these things. And we need some action regarding that. I mean, I feel like people aren't safe right now. And when you put out threats like that and there's no action, there's no protection going on, I mean, tension is building. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like something does need to happen.
I had something else, but it's fleeing my mind, and I'm not sure. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I want to get your report on the follow-up to the River Street camp, of course, only concerns, as I always say, 61 people or a few more, maybe, out of the 1,000 to 2,000 people who are outside and the hundreds displaced by the Ross camp eviction. But, you know, we did, I guess, focus on that River Street camp because of It was the only outdoor campground that the city has ever officially supported. It was very, you know, it was so severely limited that we were concerned about the civil rights of people in that camp. But you, not only did you get those number of rules reduced, but I believe that you now have access to people inside based, and others do too, to some extent, though not to the extent that the captain originally said, Captain Harold said that there would be not 24-hour access, but a limited daytime access.
Mm-hmm.
How has that been working out? Have you got any reports from inside the camp that things are getting better? I think there's some talk about their showers are either more likely or on the horizon or something to that effect.
Well, I've heard that supposedly this weekend they're supposed to be getting a laundry, like a portable laundry facility, so that they can do some laundry. I've heard that they still don't have showers. Their potable water is much still the same. It comes from like a barrel with a piece of wood on it that's got like, it's kind of dirty looking. on it. It doesn't taste good. So I know the water is still the same situation. They had a few incidents there, medical incidents. I don't know. There was reports of a guy being too intoxicated to move, and the staff kind of waiting too long to call 911. So I got some reports of that. A couple of our plaintiffs do still live there, the plaintiffs that are in the lawsuit. And so we do have ability to visit. I know there was some problems with them getting food, and they're really hungry there. So Steve, that was the report that I read this morning. Steve was over there dropping off, like, tuna, canned peaches, things like that. And I know that Sunday, the DSA, Vicky from the DSA kept asking me, because she hadn't heard back from Eric, and they wanted to go there and bring food, but she didn't know that they had permission. So I told her that, yes, they indeed had permission. And so it's my understanding the DSA went there on Sunday and passed out a bunch of food and things like that. They really need hygiene products right now because they can't take showers. So things like hand sanitizer and baby wipes and things like that are a necessary need there.
Well, I guess I remember speaking to one of your clients there. I interviewed him and played the interview on Free Radio. I guess Mark, his name was. He said that, you know, he hadn't bathed in 10 days, but he said people could take the van to the Homeless Lack of Services Center at Coral Street, although they could presumably walk there. It's 6 blocks away if they let them out, or 4 blocks away, but they don't let you walk out yet still. But you have to wait for a considerable period of time there, and often you don't get into the shower line. Have you heard anything about a change in that?
I've not. That's the last report I got of how that works. And the reason for that is that there are so many people camping outside of the Homeless Services Center because the Ross campus closed and the River Street shelter is full. So if you look over there, basically behind the railroad tracks, this morning I saw a bunch of cops over there because there's people camping right outside that sign where it says 750 people have been housed. So there are a lot of people camping out in the area, and what happens is they get in the line first. And so by the time the shuttle comes and, you know, transports you to the drop-off location and you get in line over there, there's already, 20 or 30 people of Ross Camp refugees and others who are already in line. So that's where he said Mark tried several times to get a shower and didn't get one. Even after trying, getting shuttled down there and all that, he still didn't get a shower.
Now, I've tried to get a hold of Brent Adams, who is, as you know, does day and night storage, and has advertised that in June he himself will be offering a laundry service, which of course is also important, particularly if folks' clothes get wet, which I understand has been a problem with people in their tents. There was a rain problem at the River Street camp, and I would imagine also at where people are setting up their own tents. Your clothes get soaked, they get mildewy, there's no place to dry them out. Or alternately, when things get hot, particularly if you're at this enclosed, you can't go out except every hour via the vans at the River Street camp, because they don't let you walk out of the camp or walk into the camp without unusual express permission, like a medical excuse, I guess. Maybe that might be one reason. But these have been problems there. Have you heard anything about improvements in that regard, or anything around that?
No. I haven't heard anything about improvements, and I do have, I haven't heard anything about Brent's program. I mean, I think that's great if he's offering that. That's definitely something people are going to be needing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I do have some concerns over the heat. They have no coverage over at the River Street camp. They have just small, very small tents, and I've heard that the temperatures that get inside those tents is just extremely high. I haven't got an actual temperature from anybody that's been able to tell me what the temperature inside their tent is, but it's really high, to the point where people feel like, faint and stuff in there. And they have no canopies and nothing like that, and the tents are really small, and the temperatures are steadily increasing. We're in summertime now, so I have some concerns. And also, we are talking about something that is only funded until June 30th, despite rumors that it might have, you know, longer-term funding, I have heard nothing to confirm that. So unless there's another planned option by the city and somebody really gets on to doing something soon, we're not going to have anything put in place when the closure of that camp happens and this problem will increase.
Now, there was a time when you and other members of the Ross camp, when there was a Ross camp, were meeting regularly with Councilman Drew Glover. And the city council is still having regular, even frequent meetings. I don't know if they're happening every week, but certainly every other week, and there are budget hearings in addition coming up. Have you had much communication with him in the last few weeks?
Well, I spoke with him on the phone a few days ago, and I did see him at, Drew Glover, that is, at the event that was held for Food Not Bombs. The soup event.
That was last Friday, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, not as steady as we were meeting, you know, and getting everything discussed, like when the Ross camp was open and we were meeting every week. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like we have that level of communication right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know originally back in January, he really was consulting with homeless activists in order to set up an agenda of actual actions, which seemed to be quite impressive, one series of staff reports after another. But then when those got derailed by the city manager and the mayor and the failure of his hoped-for council majority, that kind of evaporated. That whole, he doesn't seem to be holding intern meetings anymore. He does get back to you by phone if you call him. I've noticed that, and that's commendable. But I haven't seen, you know, that kind of public outreach.
Well, I know he's working on something. So, I mean, in our phone conversation, he did say that he was working on some things in preparation for the next, you know, upcoming, to try to get some things on the agenda for the next city council meetings.
Well, I know that
I know he's trying.
Well, today would be that day. In fact, I think I will give him a call and ask what he intends to try to put on the council agenda, because I think that's important to know. But we should also note that at the same city council meeting on Tuesday, where you presented your concerns about Chief Mills' failure to chide or, you know, separate himself from those vigilante violence folks or people who are at least making comments on the Facebook page, it could be construed as direct threats or at least indirect threats to people who are outside. There was also a couple that came up and announced they had filed a recall for both Glover and Crone, and we're trying to get signatures around that. So that also seems to be happening. Any comments on that?
Else about that, I guess the last recall that was attempted was, you know, a very long time ago, and it was not successful. So, I mean, although it's not necessarily an extremely difficult process to do, but I know that, and I've heard that they have money because they're going to use, I guess, what's left over from their Measure M campaign. So they're going to use a bunch of donations that were given to them or something else, I guess, to pay for this. So they're funded. I mean, I don't really know a lot about the, you know, their potential success in this. I'm disappointed that they would go through all that to try to get out Drew and Chris when they're the only ones that are actually trying to propose any solution-based approaches to anything lately. So I think it's really stupid. But I mean, again, I don't know what's going to happen.
And I guess you said at the Huff and Conscience in Action meetings that you would be going to this 5-7 meeting June 3rd, next Monday, at the police station to keep an eye on the West Side Neighbors, or NIMBYs, as I call them, RVs out of town group.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'll be there.
And I guess you also said you'll be at the, doing some tabling, or one of your associates will, at the Food Not Bombs meals in 4-6 to try to solicit reports of, and maybe some solidarity with activists who are in their vehicles or outside, who are being threatened with violence or just maybe police harassment. Huh?
Yep, I will be there from 4 to 6 on Saturday and probably Sunday as well. If not me, somebody else.
You have any other goodies for us there, Alicia Cool?
I don't think so. I mean, just if you've suffered harassment or any kind of tickets or citations or somebody's threatened you, you can call the Santa Cruz Homeless Union at 831-431-7766.
Can you repeat that number?
It's 831-431-7766.
All right, well, I'm good with that. I'll leave it there unless you got something you want to add.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Alicia.
All righty. Bye.
All right, bye. So we're now trying to give a quick call to activist Drew Glover, because Thursday is the day when 2 weeks before a city council meeting you have to put items before the mayor and the vice mayor and the city manager to see if they actually will go on the agenda. So let's see what he's got brewing here, since this is that Thursday. And we're giving him a ring.
Hello, Robert Norris.
Hey, Drew. I'm calling you. I'm recording for Free Radio's broadcast at 6 o'clock tonight.
Okay.
And I know that today is the day when you normally have to jump 2 weeks ahead in your mind to anticipate a city council meeting in order to get stuff on the agenda. Is that what you're thinking about today at all?
That is correct, yes.
Anything you're trying to put on the agenda that you'd like to know the community, whatever the mayor and the city manager and the vice mayor decide, but that you would like to see on the agenda for this coming council meeting?
Yeah, absolutely. I have two things that I'll be introducing. The first one is for the establishment of a human rights commission here in Santa Cruz. We have many of our cities throughout California that have established either a human rights commission or a human relations commission that is dedicated to focusing on issues of discrimination, racism, oppression, bigotry, and other forms of things that are usually facing vulnerable communities. That includes people from race, discrimination, gender-based discrimination, issues of sexual orientation discrimination. There's also a subcommittee focused on homelessness and homeless rights. There's a subcommittee focused on environmental rights, another one on education, another one on children's rights. So we're trying to address all the different issues there. And then the other piece that I'll be introducing is a resolution for the city to officially endorse the Green New Deal as on the federal level, and then also state the intention of implementing aspects of it into our city policies, with looking at creating green jobs and making a shift so that the concept of environmental sustainability is included in all of our policies.
It sounds, forgive me, like a kind of a shift from what you were doing in January when you called together interns and activists to try to put together very concrete and specific proposals around bathrooms, campgrounds, civil rights issues for homeless people. And I know that, you know, you have been fended off by the mayor and disappointed by a failure of the council majority to act on these issues. In fact, more, I would say, clearly to, you know, deflect them and just delay them. But, you know, am I wrong in thinking that these latest things sound to me like the kind of feel-good stuff that isn't very specific in terms of its immediate impact on the lives of poor people and renters, for that matter, who are also poor people? What's your thought on that?
So there are more like a framework for future policies that correlate with those different populations, as well as other ones that are incorporated in the Human Rights Commission. In the establishment of the Human Rights Commission, we can have a body of citizens looking at issues addressing human rights in Santa Cruz. So that would be a direct connection to ideally alleviating some of the issues that we're dealing with around poverty in Santa Cruz, the Green New Deal. It's around sustainability. These are the issues that I campaigned on and I hold near and dear to my heart. The issue of homelessness and equity is right up there with the issues of sustainability and representation. And with the city staff back sometime between now and June 11th with the requested with regards to the citations and the criminalization of poverty, and the project charters, which are both now, after I checked in with the director of Parks and Rec, slated to come back in August, that is in process. So there's nothing I can really do at this point to expedite that or make it happen any faster than what has been laid out, especially since my colleagues have decided that that is the best way to go. So that is on hold until August, unfortunately, with regards to being able to address those issues. And I did hear from Cynthia Berger at the last city council meeting who said that she had a group of witnesses that she was suggesting for the city to adopt that were nothing extreme, but were steps towards providing some sense of security for tenants and tenant advocates and the such. So I'll be meeting with her ideally over the next week or so to figure out what those are and see if we can, you know, after analyzing them, if it's feasible to get them on the agenda for the last meeting in June.
So the ordinances you're talking about, of course, which you asked for reports on way back in January that to be given in May and that got delayed, Condotti apologized for, but then got dumped far into June, and as you pointed out, now are getting kicked into August. Are these reports available, going to be available to the public when you get them in, you know, before June 11th, as you said, they're going to be coming. This is our reports around stats as to the impact of camping, I don't know, in being in a closed area, public intoxication. I call them the anti-homeless ordinances, but, you know, they have a broader application. But they generally, in my view, impact homeless people rather severely and are intended for that purpose and used for that purpose. Will these be available to the public? Will you be making them available?
Unless I'm informed that for some reason the data is confidential, which I don't imagine it would be, then I'll be making all reports that I receive public.
You also you chair the Public Safety Committee. I think you recently met with Bob Aronson, the nice guy, but essentially the fig leaf for the police department's behaviors, which essentially involve no meaningful public review of its behavior, whether it has to do with its surveillance policies or its tasering policies or its racial policies. At least that's been my experience over the years. Any reports from the Public Safety Committee that you want to pass on to us?
It was a closed session. It was the annual review of the police auditor. So we met with Mr. Aronson as well as representatives from the police department. My colleagues sit on that commission. We'll be putting up a public report, I think, in the next week that summarizes everything that was covered in the meeting and information about our next one, which I believe is scheduled for June 17th at 5:30 p.m., and that one will be open to the public.
Do you know if Aronson's reports have actually been written and made available to the public in past years? Because I've not been able to find them. Maybe I've just not looked in the right place.
No, I don't think that the reports are available to the public. That's why it was held in a closed session. But we can give general facts and surface level information.
And what would an example of that be?
An example from a right that I saw from a previous iteration of the committee was that they gave a general description of the most egregious issues that they ran into.
You're not being specific. Do you have any sense of what we're talking about here? Or?
In that document that I received, I think it was something along the lines of not collecting evidence or something like that. I'm not sure. You can go back and find the 2016 report from the Public Safety Committee. That's public.
I'll have to go take a look. I haven't seen it online, but if you can, I'd like you to request those reports be made available to the public if they're not already available, just and easily available. They should be in the library, I would think. Although
I'm right there, but I really have to go. So all the time I have for today is...
Is that a yes, you're going to do that, or a no, you're not, or you don't know?
I don't know if it's possible to do that. So I will take your request to the, I guess, the staff, or the city attorney, or the police chief, and try to figure out what is able to be made public.
All right, well, thanks, Drew, and appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Good day.
And by the way, your phone connection is pretty shitty, so I'm not sure if it's yours or mine, so just to let you know.
I'm not sure, but thanks for letting me know.
Sure. Bye-bye. It's more than past time for a musical break, so let's do it.
The greatest hoax in history. Yeah.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Is it true that you threw a tiny baby temper tantrum and stormed out of your infrastructure meeting after learning that Nancy Pelosi accused you of being, quote, engaged in a cover-up?
I don't do cover-ups. This meeting was set up a number of days ago at 11 o'clock. All of a sudden, I hear last night they're going to have a meeting right before this meeting to talk about the I word.
The what?
The I word.
Impotent?
The I word.
Irrational?
The I word.
Idris Elba?
The I word.
Oh, impeachment.
Can you imagine?
Well.
The whole thing with Russia was a hoax. And I will tell you, my lawyers say, you don't have to do this. You can use presidential privilege. You don't have to let your lawyers and all of your staff testify. Would you recommend it? Well, you can be transparent or you can be tight.
Sweetie, you seem riled up. Would you like a hard candy or maybe a ventilator?
These people were out to get us.
Well, if I may, Mr. President. Some days, Democrats can be a pain trying to circumvent. It's hard to be the fake president. What crazy sounds you make. Is it a substance that you're sniffing? Or could it just be a sinus thing? Life just ain't rosy. Nancy Pelosi's creeping on your TV, acting shady. Try to drop Mueller. Thought this was over, but she's got your number now, and you feel under attack. Just keep breathing and breathing and breathing and breathing. You know they might impeach. Keep on breathing. Just keep wheezing, seething, panting, grimacing. Your teeth are falling out. Keep your teeth in.
Presidential privilege.
You clown and mess around. Joking about subpoenas they get. Invoking so much executive privilege. But now things got you down. Thought that your Fox friends would never cheat. Why they all crushing on Mayor Pete?
Ooh, girl.
They just dissed Donald. Now he's disgruntled. He's breathing like my old man's carburetor. Ew. He cries no fair and blames. He's transparent. I guess you could say he's right, cause we see through him every time. Madam Speaker, dozens of House Democrats, along with multiple legal experts and my Aunt Linda, have found clear grounds for impeachment. Where do you stand?
I don't think we should impeach a president for political reasons.
How about just for fun?
We have to see what the facts are. I mean, this is not a day at the beach. Let's hope that a level of maturity here will set in, because the American people expect results.
Just impeach him, impeach him, impeach him, impeach him.
Well, let me say.
Excuse me. They say the only way you can reach him is impeach him, impeach him, impeach him. But you know it's what they want. Sir, you tweeted a video of Speaker Pelosi, which was clearly doctored to make her appear drunk or impaired. Isn't that a cheap shot?
What they've done is abuse. The President of the United States engaged in a cover. Oh, let's call Russia. Maybe they get it's a hoax.
Just keep tweeting, retweeting, misleading, and cheating.
Gross.
I hear a lot of phlegm. He's breathing. Just impeach him, impeach him, impeach him. But I'm tired of hearing them say impeach him. Just do it already. Let's go get a drink. When your sky's falling, just keep stonewalling. What is going on with his breathing. What's he been huffing? Is she just loving?
God bless the United States.
Girl.
That's the latest Randy Rainbow song parody. I wish I knew what it was a parody of. Could be a new musical that I haven't heard, and there are plenty of those, but, well, there it was.
This is an opportunity for members of the community to speak to us on items that are not listed on today's agenda.
And this is the standard Martine Watkins rap before the oral communications period at 7 o'clock at the Santa Cruz City Council meetings every second and fourth Tuesday. This was on the 28th.
And if there are members of the community who are interested in speaking during oral communications, I see you've already started to form a line to my left. I would like to ask if you're interested in speaking briefly before the council, if you could self-select, and we'll have those who want to speak for just 1 minute, feel free to come forward first so that we can get as many people within the 30 minutes of oral communications.
And this is her method of essentially cutting back oral communication and providing the discouraging people actually from coming to oral communication. There was a very long line that extended all the way to the door from the front of the room all the way back to the door and along the wall a bit. But some of the people who were a part of the oral communications eventually dropped out because they looked at the line and they said, I'll never get a chance to talk for 2 minutes given the fact that it's only a 30-minute oral communication period. And neither of the council members ask that the time be extended, and instead the mayor used her usual threats of arrest when there were protests about this from the audience, or people wanted to go over their time at all. Or some people were holding up signs that said, I support Drew Glover, and other messages, I don't know, homeless civil rights, the right to sleep. I don't remember what the exact messages were. They were signs handed out often by Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs. Good for him. And Watkins would regularly interrupt, stating that the speaker is saying, can you put your sign down so that people can see when people are holding their signs up at, oh, I don't know, chin level. They weren't holding them above their heads. They weren't blocking people. Although it is true that at one point when someone asked if anyone was blocking, some harsh voices behind them shouted yes, although there was no one immediately behind them. And there were in the audience some folks who were there. Well, one couple was there, as you heard me announce when I, well, mentioned when I talked to Alicia Cool, to announce the recall of council members Glover and Crone. Anyway, here's some more of the oral communications period.
Time we are able to conclude the 1 minute speakers, we'll go ahead and open it up to 2 minutes. So anybody who is interested in self-selecting to just briefly make a point during oral communications, please feel free to do so. You will be able to go first, and then we'll open it up for the 2 minutes. I also want to remind those that are here in the audience here during oral communications, it's a time for us to show respect to each other, to our fellow citizens.
It's kind of ironic when she talks about respect, because the very structure of the oral communications period and her method of using it is a fundamentally kind of disrespect to the speakers as a group and each speaker individually, although it is mechanically and I suppose mathematically equal in how it's given to each speaker. Each speaker is equally disrespected. Keith McHenry was the first speaker in line, and when she talked about 1 minute or 2 minutes, McHenry walked over to the mic and gave a speech, which she interrupted at the end of 1 minute. He tried to continue to speak because I kind of presumed he had been standing at the head of the line to be ahead of one of the two-minute speakers. Now, I don't know if he said that in his speaking, but it's hard to believe she didn't see him at the head of the line. He had been standing there for some time before the meeting actually began. She had a clear view of him, so I don't know. Anyway, here's more of this. Also, she has completely eliminated the group speaking time. People who have a group presentation let her know in advance. She, in the past few months, as David Terraz is before her, specifically said that they can have extra time speaking for groups. Now she's apparently eliminated that without going to the city council to change the rules. And no member of the city council has attempted to file a motion saying, look, there's a group speaking time. Why are you not allowing people to do group speaking? And that is something, of course, that individuals can call Drew Glover or Chris Crone, or if you think you can get somewhere, Sandy Brown, or even Justin Cummings. I wouldn't suggest necessarily Myers or Matthews or Watkins would be the first people to go to. But it's been at least a recent tradition, although I have to say candidly that it was not a tradition far back when. It was usually done only during public comment on specific agenda items rather than oral communication. But since it's been the case for the last, 8 or 9 months, to suddenly restrict it and claim you don't have time when, in fact, there's only one other item on the agenda. And there has been, in the last two council evening sessions, only one other item other than oral communications on the agenda, makes it appear that you simply just don't want people to have, or particularly groups to have, that speaking time.
Citizens who are interested in speaking before us to maintain decorum. If I observe disruption or an inability for us to govern or an inability for anybody to come and speak before the council with fear of threat, then I will give you...
Of course, she is presenting people with the inability to speak before council by this very restrictive set of rules. And under those rules, of course, she herself should be ushered out of the room, which... would certainly earn my applause, but I don't think that anybody's about to do that, suggest it, or actually enforce it.
The warning, if it continues, I will ask you to leave the council chambers. So we'll go ahead and start with...
Now, I hope at some point I actually stand up and ask her to leave the council chambers, because I think that would be making the point more clearly.
So 1 minute self-selected oral communication speakers first.
Yeah, my name is Keith McHenry, and it's completely hypocritical to be talking about decorum and all that when you and the staff and the city attorney knew full well that by shutting down Ross, you'd be forcing everyone into the streets, and here's a documentation of that. And your dishonesty and cruelty and lack of support for the right to free speech and the manipulation of the city council to make sure that a pro-developer agenda that for your handlers, whoever you're working for, would be the only option available. And so that's what we are seeing here, sadly, today. So I support the ability to have solutions in this community for things like tenants' rights and for the homeless, instead of this obstruction and this corruption and this dishonesty, which is being led by Martine Watkins, but aided, of course, by our city attorney and our city manager. So you're a shameful person. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor, council members. Just like to state that today served to Bonnie Lipscomb was the petition for recall for Councilmember Glover and Councilmember Crone. And we have the papers here. They are in registered mail. We are going through due process. So the recall has begun. Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and remind you all that now is a chance for every person to come and express themselves without obstruction.
But not people, apparently, who are registering a negative opinion, which is what they were doing. And this actually is a right of an audience. An audience can applaud, an audience can boo, provided they're not cutting off a speaker. And these two speakers who are presenting, actually there was only one, but she was up there with a female companion who was also with him. He'd finished speaking. That is the right of an audience to do. And there have been some city councils that I've been at which have said you're not allowed to clap because they don't like it, or they think it takes up too much time. it's the right of the audience and the public to do that, and I've always insisted on that and continued to do it. It's also the right to boo. Now, if you're interrupting or intimidating a speaker, that's different, although I can understand why some people would do that in the face of the kind of hate speech that comes up at these council meetings occasionally against groups of people, where I tend to think it is appropriate to do that, although I also have some conflicting sentiments because I also have a very strong commitment to the right to freedom of speech. But to have a mayor who is constantly cutting back free speech, hypocritically talking about free speech, is a little rich.
Or intimidation. If there's continued intervention, then I will go ahead and give you a warning, and then I will ask you to leave. And if that continues, I will ask you to leave. I also want to remind you to lower your sign so you're not obstructing the vision of the person behind you. Mr. McHenry, if you could please lower your sign. And if there's one more disruption, I will go ahead and ask you to leave. Okay, please go through your headlights.
So she's already warning McHenry that she's going to ask him to leave based on what? Based on the fact that he booed, based on the fact that he had a sign, which we're talking about a small 8x11 piece of paper. That's the sign he had. And he was sitting in the front row, and there was no one in the row behind him. Now, some rows back, later on, it may have become an issue, but it's perhaps an example of Watkins nervously trying to assert power, which I think she successfully did, unfortunately, based upon the fact that at the last council meeting, the audience exerted its power and stopped the meeting twice. Of course, she then cleared the chambers and locked everybody out. But this kind of process should not be allowed. This kind of bullying of the audience should not be allowed to deter people from returning and expressing themselves in the ways they have the right to do. Booing from the audience is a right. Holding up a sign is a right. Criticizing a policy that eliminates public comment for groups, cuts back public comments for individuals, treats people rudely, brusquely, and coercively, unnecessarily cutting back public comment generally is also something that I think needs to be protested and objected to.
1 minute. Hi, I'm Carolyn Irish. My family and I are over 40-year residents of Santa Cruz. Our 32-year-old daughter was assaulted downtown in broad daylight. The assailant was sentenced today and will be free in a few months, and I am very concerned as a person who wants to remodel my home and live in Santa Cruz that this community has gone downhill, and we need to make some changes to make it a safer community for everyone and to respect the citizens' rights more than people who are breaking the law. Because they are allowing him to continue to go downtown where this happened, and it just feels very unfair. And I need to have this community be more safe. Thank you.
It's kind of hard to make any judgments based upon what this woman has said. And I was in line. I was holding my place in line, so I didn't really rush after her to get to record her, nor did I have a second recorder to do it. I usually place my recorder at the podium so it can get the speeches so you can hear them, because when this is broadcast, it's on Thursday, the Thursday after the Tuesday City Council meeting. That's not the time when the actual video and the audio are available to the public, so I can't really use the online services to do that. I have to make my own recording. But I can't say whether she was, whether this is sort of code for we don't want these goddamn homeless people around, or whether general statements about lack of safety downtown do tend to make me think that she is referencing that kind of claim rather than, some individual who she holds accountable for striking her, for assaulting her. But I don't know.
Next speaker, these are the folks who are willing to speak for just 1 minute want to self-select in that regard. Is there any additional members here who are here for oral communications that would like to have 1 minute? Okay, seeing that, we'll go ahead and move forward with the line to my left, and we'll increase the time to 2 minutes.
Hello, Council. My name is Elise Casby. First of all, I would like to say that in these chambers, I never did give a Nazi salute. I was outside, and that is a gesture to try to warn people about fascism.
And Elise is talking about an incident which regular council viewers and regular listeners to my show may already know about. At the last council meeting, once the people had been locked out of the chambers, some of them not only shouted shame, but gave some Nazi salutes. I think I gave a Nazi salute at some point because we believed, or I believed anyway, this was acting in a fascist-like manner. So that's what that was about.
In my belief and opinion, which is researched and studied, this country has been trending towards serious fascism since the year 2000, when the media, such as Fox News and CNN and others, decided who would be president for the rest of us. And that opinion is held by excellent media analysts. 4 years after that, I led a voting rights movement in San Diego, and I just want to say that researching and studying this has been extremely important to me, and I would never use that symbol lightly. I do want to say that the context I was using that in was about the 30-minute time limit. Little history on that. A couple months ago, just after the new year, some of our council members changed the public speaking time, what we're doing right now, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. They did this because they wanted to make sure that working people could come here at 7 o'clock. It went to vote, and very quickly at the end, Mayor Watkins tacked onto it that, we'll only have 30 minutes. We're going to limit that to 30 minutes. For a long time before this, and I have been observing council for 6 years, it was not limited. And my goal today is to ask you all to reconsider that idea. Public comment.
I don't know if she's correct with that. I think it may have been pretty standard under a lot of previous conservative, I would call them even reactionary mayors, Terrazas, Matthews, and so forth. And sometimes the public comment was extended, although I don't even have any clear memory of that. I have to really review it. There was a time many years ago when public comment was essentially unlimited. I went on for long periods of time, 45 minutes longer, and certainly public comment can be extended and has been at different times.
It's the only time when people from the public can come in and address the council in public, that is, with full transparency about any issue that they might care about. Shutting down free speech is one of the most prevalent indicators of fascism. It's happening all over the state right now. This issue is before many city councils, and I would ask you to think about it. One more thing, it's extremely important to address climate change that we have democracy and free speech. Thank you very much.
Yay! Do you have a sign to lower it so that the people behind you aren't
So there is really the question of focusing a lot on being able to get 3 minutes rather than 2 minutes, or more than 30 minutes total time, or a group presentation for 4 minutes or 5 minutes as it used to be. Are any of these limited times at all means much when you have a very reactionary council that is also largely in the hands of an even more reactionary staff? Alicia Kuhl has suggested, and I've myself suggested in the past, that people start working on alternative organs of government, where they develop alternate processes of appealing to the community, which are outside the city council, and which involve some sort of independent parallel public process. When the city council shut down the Citizens Police Review Board in 2003, I suggested there be a Citizens Police Review Board in exile, which would have been run by the then chair, Mark Halfmoon. He seemed to initially warm to the idea, but then when you no longer could have a plaque in front of your name and get a staff to support you, and maybe he had his own, you know, poverty problems. He's a poor man. He's not a wealthy guy. a guy of color who was beginning to research and investigate racial discrimination by the police department and use of force and things of that sort. City Council under Matthews and other right-wingers sliced off the Citizens Police Review Board. Instead, we have this Bob Aronson, police auditor, who does nothing, really, that has any kind of, in terms of real accountability that I've seen, and a public safety committee that's more concerned with public security for police officers and fire people and increasing police power rather than monitoring it, checking it, or increasing citizen and or humanity power.
We'll go ahead and have our next speaker. If the signs are raised, and Mr. McHenry, any further than that, I will ask you to leave. Just wanted to make sure we're clear on that. Great, go ahead, you'll have up to 2 minutes.
Okay, I have some signs that I'd like everyone
this
to
see.
Alicia Kuhl. My name's Alicia Kuhl. I'm the president of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union. We've become aware of postings on Facebook page titled Santa Cruz Looks Like Shit, encouraging acts of violence against homeless persons and those living in RVs. A person named Cynthia Ritnor reported on a note placed on an RV, a parked RV, that warned the occupants they better move along, signed Harry the Flame. In response to a photograph of a parked RV posted by a Mr. Ryan Harris, a person named J.M. Gaston wrote, 3+ dudes and a Louisville Sluggers wanted. A Mr. Mike Rogers posted, gasoline and a match work well together. And Jennifer Garcia urges people to falsely report that homeless persons are armed, writing, didn't you see them with a weapon? Hint, hint, tell the police. However, amazingly, instead of investigating these acts of criminal solicitation of violence, Chief of Police Andy Mills has actually joined this hate website, where his name and photograph appear right alongside those of those posting advice to commit murder, arson, vandalism, and criminal assault. Chief Mills should be immediately terminated. He should be protecting all residents, not leading a lynch mob. In the meantime, our union will be taking the matter up with the Santa Cruz District Attorney and the state police. And I would like for you to view that he's also friends with Mr. John Green. And I'm advising everybody, please do not involve yourself in any acts of vigilantism. The homeless are very much on the defensive right now. They are also armed and ready to protect themselves. So I advise against any acts of violence or vigilantism. Have you gotten to see all of them?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this was also conducted with kind of visual displays on the screen as she went ahead with her verbal presentation.
Hello, I'm natealex.kennedy@gmail.com, 346-9888. First thing I got to address here is the new 5G technology. It is really scary. To start out, it is supposed to be really, really fast, so fast that it comes close to computer hard drive access speeds. And not only that, it is extremely deadly. There was a 5G tower that was turned on as a flock of birds were flying overhead, and the whole flock died and came raining down. So what we need to do as a city is to ban 5G in Santa Cruz, hopefully Santa Cruz County, and try to get as many other cities and counties as we can in the state to follow us, and maybe get more around in other states to do the same. This is really important. 5G is deadly. No 5G. All right, on the next subject, now marijuana is legal, and the catch is it is not legal to use in public. So everybody's supposed to be using it on private property in their own home. But, you know, a lot of people, myself included, are in housing situations where smoking is banned, which includes everything. There's, you know, you can't do it at your own home. So you go out to a park or something, and the rangers come up and give you a ticket. Yeah, it happened to me so far. I think the best solution to this, what I want to do, is I would love to start a pot bar, a pot pub where people can go in and smoke, and it would be the main part of the business. And one of the things is we'd need cannabis licenses to allow it to be used. Now, I would love to see you guys help in actually being able to get at least one pop pub started in the city. Thank you.
And just briefly, an article online, 5G radiation dangers, 11 reasons to be concerned. Why? Because the frequency bandwidths used currently by cell phones and similar technologies are becoming saturated, and so we are moving into the world of 5G or fifth generation cellular telecommunications. 5G promises to connect us in our homes, schools, workplaces, cities, parks, and open spaces to over a trillion objects around the world, promises cars that drive themselves, washing machines that order their own washing powder and softener, plus super fast downloads and streaming. According to Fortune.com, 5G will support at least 100 billion devices and will be 10 to 100 times faster than the current 4G technology, which was itself 10 times faster than the third generation 3G technology. It'll bring download speed up to 10 gigabytes per second. This would allow us to have an entire building of people send each other data in close to no time, thus improving productivity. However, millimeter waves, MMWs, do not travel well through buildings, and they tend to be absorbed by rain and plants. This interferes with the signal. Added to this, high-frequency waves like MMVs also have shorter wavelengths that can't travel far. To counteract this problem, 5G will utilize smaller cell stations and the technology of beamforming, a lot of this I'm not familiar with, that'll scramble, unscramble, and redirect packets of data on a no-interference path back to us. This could mean wireless antennas on every lamppost, utility pole, home and business throughout entire neighborhoods, towns, and cities. Dangers of this article, which is on electricsense.com website. Thousands of studies link low-level wireless radio frequency radiation exposures to a long list of adverse biological effects, including DNA single and double-strand breaks, oxidative damage, disruption of cell metabolism, increased blood-brain barrier permeability, melatonin reduction, disruption to brain glucose metabolism, generation of stress problems. Nor, let's not forget also, the article continues, in 2011, the World Health Organization classified radio frequency radiation as a possible 2B carcinogen. Whatever exactly that means, I'm not entirely sure. 5G is set to utilize frequencies above and below existing frequency bands. 5G sits in the middle of all this, but the tendency is for 5G to utilize higher frequency bands, which brings its own particular concerns.